welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today I'll be reading another article from Tales of Al, the Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Superhero by Lynn Cox, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles from newsletters and magazines about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. We'll begin today's readings with Tales of Al by Lynn Cox. In the previous chapters, we learned that Lynn was swimming with Moss, and at times she would act as though she was needing to be rescued. She would detach from the dog handle on Moss's harness, and Moss would then present himself and his handle to her. He did this again and again, each time that Lynn detached from the harness. Eventually, Moss was able to tow Lynn back to shore, and all was fine. Chapter 11, Biscotti Lion Dog. Donatella invited me to her home to meet Zack, her Leonberger. Known as the Lion Dog, it is a breed developed by a man from Leonberg, Germany, by crossing a long-haired St. Bernard with a Landsea Newfoundland, a Great Pyrenees. The dog was created to resemble a lion. Leonbergers are great family dogs, working dogs, and farm dogs. Zack was elderly. He had a disc problem in his neck, and he had hip dysplasia. The balls and sockets in his hips did not fit properly as they had deteriorated, but Zack was a happy dog. When we walked into Donatella's home, Zack was lying down on the floor, thumping his long, bushy tail and trying to lift his head. His face was a black-colored mask, and his eyes were dark brown and dimming. Long fur covered his neck and chest like a lion's mane. "Is it okay if I pet him?" I asked cautiously. "Of course. He is gentle and he loves people," Donatella said. Al reached Zack before me, and she gently touched noses with Zack. Wagging his tail faster, Zack sniffed Al's feet to detect where Al had been all day. Zack expanded his investigation and sniffed Al's legs and breath. He probably knew that she had been to the lake and had eaten biscotti. Donatella opened her bag. She wanted to make sure that Zack got one too. She knelt and handed both dogs a biscotti. Zack ate his surprisingly slowly. Al took hers and consumed it in two chumps. Donatella slowly rubbed Zack's neck and shoulders. He struggled to lift his head and gaze at her. Oh, how he loved her, and she loved him. I think she said he was 8 years old. She had owned him since he was a puppy. Al lay carefully down beside Zack, maybe protectively. "Are you sure Al is okay with my petting Zack?" I asked. Donatella said it was fine. Al was not jealous. She just loved to be close to Zack. They were the best of friends. I got down on my hands and knees so I didn't frighten the dog, and I let Zack sniff my hands. His nose was large and black, and his breath was surprisingly cool. I reached across his wide chest and gently scratched behind his soft black ears and his armpits. I knew dogs loved to have something scratched, and they could not reach with their own paws. I told Al she was a good girl and studied Zack. It was the first time I had ever seen a Leonberger. Running my hands across his broad chest, I felt the long outer coat and the shorter inner coat. Beneath were muscles that were once strong. His fur was a blend of black, white, caramel, and yellow, highlighted with shades of red. Donatella had waited 2 years for her Leonberger to be born. She felt so lucky when she found Zack. She said he had a beautiful coat and heart. She knelt beside him, and Zack struggled to lift his head to lick her. She stroked his back and told him in a warm voice that he was a brave cane, a good dog. She loved Zack, and Zack loved her, but there's so much sadness in their love. Al felt it and sighed deeply. Zack's strength was waning quickly. They all knew he would not live much longer. He knew it, too. They all tried to go on with life and only show him their love and kindness. Donatella got up, brushed fur off her pants, and picked up the thick belt resting on the chair. Zack needed to go outside. I offered to help, but Donatella said she could manage. She threaded the belt under Zack to lift his hips. I wondered how she was ever going to move a dog that big. He was ungainly and weighed more than she did. She positioned herself beside Zach, squatted down, and used the strength of her legs to push up and lift him. He managed to get his front legs under himself. His legs wobbled and he slipped, but Donatella helped him to stand, and they staggered outside together. Al waited for Zach and watched the door, her golden eyes alert. She knew one day soon Zach would not walk back through that door. But this day Zach did, and Al greeted him exuberantly, like her best friend had been gone for a long time. She had to show Zach how much she loved him every moment that they were together. Zach stumbled to the corner of the living room, and Donatella slowly released the pressure on the belt. He collapsed and struggled to roll onto his side. Al lay beside him and rested her paw on Zach's leg. "Was Zach a water rescue dog?" I asked. "Zach was one of the best. He saved many lives," Donatella said proudly. "Why was he such a great rescue dog?" "Whatever I asked him to do, Zach would do. He trusted me and I trusted him." Zach whimpered when he heard his name. Donatella looked at him with great affection. "He is a wonderful dog," she said. I smiled, but I felt sad. There was such a heaviness in the room, and there was nothing anyone could do about it. I followed Donatella into her small kitchen. It was strange. All the countertops were bare. There weren't any canisters of flour or sugar or bottles of olive oil, wine, or water. There weren't any jars of spices or even salt and pepper, no chopping boards, no knives, no trays, nothing. It looked like Donatella never used her kitchen. She seemed to enjoy food, and usually people who savor food also like to cook. Donatella opened a cupboard. There were pasta, rice, and other dry ingredients with labels deceptively written in Italian. She took a jar off the shelf, opened it, and offered me a biscotti. She said the biscotti was made by the same friend who baked them for the dogs. The fragrance of lemon and hazelnut filled the air as I reached into the jar and pulled the cookie out. The biscotti was dipped in dark chocolate. Al looked up, hoping she could share some of my biscotti. Dogs can't eat chocolate. For them, it is poisonous, but for humans, it is something delicious. I tasted and heard myself saying, mm-mm. "You like it?" she smiled. "That biscotti is amazing, and the chocolate is bittersweet," I said. That taste made me think of the way I was feeling. It was bittersweet seeing Zach struggle while hearing how full of life he once was. Al and Zach were perking their ears and staring at Donatella. She jumped up, handed them each their own biscotti without chocolate, and the dogs devoured them. "Do you like to cook?" I asked. "It is okay, but I don't have much time because of the school and other work." "Your kitchen, it's so neat. I don't see any ingredients or utensils anywhere." Donatella laughed and said that she had to make her home Al-proof. Having Al was like having a toddler in the house. Anything within reach, she would get into, and if something was beyond her reach, she would stand on her hind legs and jump up and grab what she could. Donatella could not even put bread on top of her refrigerator, or Al would get it. We sat in chairs near a coffee table. It was free of vases, cups, and books, and I asked why. Donatella explained that with one wag of Al's tail, she could sweep everything on the table onto the floor. Donatella had hoped she could train her not to do this, but she never learned. Al sauntered into the room. Her big brown head filled Donatella's lap. She looked at Donatella with love and adoration. She was not the dog her owner wanted her to be, but Donatella loved Al, and she said her name with warmth as she scratched her firmly on the shoulder. Sighing with pleasure, the Newfoundland turned her head for Donatella to scratch the other side. She worked her way down the back of Al's neck, and Al blissfully closed her eyes, leaning heavily against Donatella. Donatella said that every puppy is a challenge. You never know what the adventure will be. Every dog is a world of its own, with its own character. Al sighed as Donatella explained that Newfoundlands are big, peaceful, and benevolent dogs. Each breed has its characteristics and histories, but there are always exceptions. Their ancestors were the molosses, a type of large dog bred to be hunters or to protect the sheep. These dogs originated in the ancient kingdom of molosses, which is now Western Greece. Across the living room were photographs of Donatella with a brown Newfoundland. The dog in the photo looked like Al. I walked over to the photo to take a closer look. Donatella was beaming. Her brown eyes were bright, and she looked proud beside the Newfoundland, who was gazing confidently into the camera. The dog's mouth was open, and it looked like it was smiling. There were more photos of Donatella and the dog. In each photo, they were receiving first-place awards. Below the picture, in case, were numerous trophies, silver cups, and plaques. "What are these awards for?" I asked. "Obedience," Donatella said. "Did you and Al win these awards?" She glanced at Al, unable to mask the disappointment in her eyes. "No, Alicia won all of them." "She looks a lot like Al. She has the same golden eyes and beautiful brown coat," I said. "Yes, I got Al because she looks a lot like Alicia, and I thought she would be like her." "Alicia was a real charmer," Donatella said. Al opened her eyes as she recognized Alicia's name. Unconsciously, Donatella stroked Al's head. "Alicia was world famous," she fondly recalled, and then said, sadly, that Alicia had passed away. They had traveled throughout Italy for obedience competitions. Alicia had been one of the world's best water rescue dogs. Media from around the globe interviewed Donatella and Alicia. Donatella showed me videos from the television stations around the world, RAI in Italy, NHK in Japan, BBC in the United Kingdom, CBC Canada, and some clips from television stations in the United States. Alicia was perfectly well-behaved and incredibly responsive to Donatella's commands. Alicia loved to perform, and she loved the spotlight, Donatella said definitely. Al wandered into the kitchen and checked to see if there was any food. Standing on her hind legs, holding the counter with her front paws, she scanned the countertop for food. Nothing there. She wandered to the sink, jumped up, and stuck her head inside. No food there either. Donatella called her, then got up to check. She could not trust Al alone for very long. Standing up to stretch, I noticed the steps that led upstairs to the bedroom. They were made from golden brown wood. Looking closer, I noticed that each step was inlaid with a portrait of Alicia. I pointed to the steps. "This is a work of art," Donatella said. She was delighted with the work. It had been her idea, but it took a long while to find a carpenter with the skill to create the steps with Alicia's profile. She wanted wood that matched the color of Alicia's fur. After months of searching, the carpenter managed to find it. She looked at the steps every day, and they reminded her of Alicia and what a champion she had been. Did Al know Alicia? "I got Al when Alicia was slowing down. I hoped that having a puppy around would give Alicia more energy. I also thought Alicia could help me teach Al. She was a patient teacher, but Al was far too much of a puppy. She chewed on Alicia's paws, pulled on her ears, and pounced on her." I asked Donatella if Al was still a puppy. Donatella said with complete frustration that Al was almost 2 years old and that she should be minding much better than she was. When Donatella spoke about Alicia, there were pauses of pain between her words. Sometimes her voice tightened, her words trailed off and became a whisper. Her eyes expressed her emptiness. She wanted Al to be like Alicia, but she was different. She would never be Alicia. Donatella tried not to show her disappointment to me, but she mentioned that she had big challenges in her life, and Al seemed to be making everything worse. Al would not mind her, but Donatella kept working with her. She hoped that Al would one day become the dog she thought she could be. Al heard the disappointment in Donatella's tone and saw it in her gestures. She was not the golden dog Alicia or the lion dog Zack. She was not the dog Donatella wanted her to be. Al knew that, but she loved Donatella anyway. There was a knock at the door, and Donatella opened it. A shiny black Labrador bounded into the room, followed by her owner. The Labrador raced across the room and tap-danced around Donatella like Ginger Rogers. Her toenails clicked loudly on the floor. She leaped up on her hind legs to hug Donatella and did a soft shoe shuffle. As Donatella held her, she glided back slow, slow, quick, slow, and then danced the foxtrot. Donatella was smiling. She signaled the lab to get down. She immediately sat, but was still filled with so much energy. She could not contain herself. She was wiggling wildly. "Bella!" Donatella leaned over and pickled the dog's head up in her hands and rubbed her furry cheeks. Bella loved that attention. She seemed to melt into Donatella's hands and slammed her tail against the floor. When Donatella released her, Bella jumped up and zigzagged between Zack and Al. She greeted them both, touched their noses, sniffed them, and circled back to her owner. She was so happy to see everyone. She charged the energy of the room. Zack was lying on his side, slowly wagging his tail, and Al was alert and watching for her next move. Once Bella stopped and took in a deep breath, her owner said, "Hello," shook hands, and said goodbye. He was leaving for the weekend, and Bella was going to be staying for a sleepover. Hoping to find crumbs on the floor, Bella, in typical Labrador fashion, raced into the kitchen, sniffed an empty dog bowl, took a gulp of water from a neighboring bowl, raced over to Zack, and stood over him. She let him sniff her feet and legs so he could explore the worlds she had visited. Zack closed his eyes, savored the scents, and got an aromatic history of Bella's stay. Bella gingerly walked around Zack, dropped down, and rolled onto her side. Making a playful sound, a sort of gurgle growl, she rolled over and looked at Zack upside down. Zack gurgled, growled back at her. She made everyone's day brighter. Bella reminded me of Cody, my yellow Labrador. He had the same joie de vivre as Bella. He was a people dog. I adopted him from a neighbor when he was 6 years old. Everyone in the neighborhood knew Cody. Everyone loved him, and he loved everyone. He walked through the neighborhood holding his leash in his mouth. That made people smile, which thrilled him. He lifted his head and tail higher and wagged it faster when he saw anyone. If a neighbor left a garage door open, Cody would walk right in and say hello. If a neighbor left the front door open, Cody would walk into the house before I could catch him. Neighbors would shout, "Oh, Cody," like he was a long-lost friend. They were thrilled to see him. One day, Cody ran into the neighbor's house and into the kitchen where the neighbor was preparing lunch. He heard a refrigerator door squeak open and slam shut. Apologizing, I followed him into the house, calling him. The neighbor asked me if his son could give Cody a biscuit. As he handed Cody a treat, the son declared, "Cody's not your dog. He's the neighborhood's dog." He was that and much more. He was our family dog. He loved to watch football and basketball games with my dad, and when my dad cheered his teams, Cody would jump up and wag his tail. He liked to lie beside my mom when she was standing at her easel working on a painting. He loved to sit beside her on the floor when she was working on her needlepoint, and he loved to go for rides in the Mazda Miata with the window rolled down so all people could see his big yellow head in the window, and he loved to see them pointing at him and laughing because it looked like he was the only one in the car. He loved to swim with me in lakes or in the Colorado River and in the ocean. He was smart and intuitive. Bella had the same characteristics, and she seemed to anticipate whatever Donatella was going to ask her to do. I said to Donatella that it seemed Labradors responded much more quickly than Newfoundlands. Donatella agreed and said if she told Alicia to do something, it took a moment for her to respond. If she told Bella to do something, she responded immediately. Both dogs were equally bright and responsive, but Alicia seemed slower because she was a much larger dog. Donatella hoped that Bella would be a good role model for Al, who was often painfully slow to respond. And that's Chapter 11, Biscotti Lion Dog. Next week, we'll read Dogs Under the Table in Tales of Al, the Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Super Athlete by Lynn Cox. Our next reading comes from Paw Prints, the magazine of the Arizona Humane Society. And this article is called Saving Pets One Snip at a Time. In honor of World Spay Day on February 25th, they were highlighting the critical role spaying and neutering play in addressing pet overcapacity at shelters across the state of Arizona and the nation. The procedures are the most effective way to reduce homeless pet populations while protecting against health issues and negative behaviors. The pandemic caused an estimated 3 million missed spay-neuter surgeries, leaving shelters to grapple with the ongoing impact. At Arizona Humane Society, our team excels in high-volume spay-neutering techniques, streamlining processes to maximize efficiency while maintaining quality care. In 2024 alone, we performed 19,168 surgeries for both shelter and owned pets, That included a single-day record of 120 alterations at the Bissell Pet Foundation spay and neuter unit during our busiest summer in a decade. Thanks to our community clinics, Healthy Tails Mobile Veterinary Clinic, Circle of Friends, supporters, and dedicated partners, we're striving for a future where preventable overpopulation no longer drives animals into the shelters. The next article, showing pit bulls the love that they deserve. Overpopulation is a major challenge for the pit bull breed. Thanks to the support of a dedicated Circle of Friends donor, we've partnered with our friends at One Love Pit Bull Foundation to schedule 40 spay and neuter surgeries each month for owned pitties. To date, our team has completed 108 surgeries and provided additional medical care, such as wellness exams, vaccines, and other medical services to the pets in need. And this final thought from the Arizona Humane Society, feel the love with a compassion cuddle. Cuddling is scientifically proven to ease stress, lower blood pressure, and even relieve pain. Pair that with tiny animals and you've got yourself an unforgettable snuggle session. We've got litters of precious puppies, kittens, and bunnies eagerly waiting for a chance to nuzzle up with you at your next event. Hurry and book your cuddle bunch today for our perfect celebration. To do that, you can go to azhumane.org/cuddlebunch. These articles all come from Arizona Humane Society, Paw Prints, the Winter 2025 edition. Pet lovers often face the sadness of having to put a pet down or having to come home to a pet that has died. This article by John Leicester talks about losing a pet. It's titled, Losing a Pet Can Cut Deeper Than Many People Realize. Here's how friends can help. The trigger might be noticing again for the umpteenth time how empty the house feels since your cat died, without the pitter-patter of padded paws or stumbling across the leash of the dog you lost and remembering how it used to set off tail-wagging glee. Grieving owners can doubly feel lonesome if the human in their lives don't quite know how to help, perhaps because they've not had pets themselves or they feel awkward around grief. Here are some simple, effective ways to deal with a friend who's experiencing grief at the loss of a pet. Offer a sympathetic ear. People who haven't experienced pet love may struggle to understand what it's like to lose it. They may think they are being helpful by saying it was just an animal or they were lucky to have such a loving owner. But pat phrases, no matter how well-meaning, can make grieving owners clam up and feel alone. You feel like you can't talk about it because people aren't really emphasizing, says Annalisa de Carteret, who manages a telephone helpline and other pet loss support services. Just allow the person to talk about how they're feeling, and you don't need to comment. Avoid cliches like, oh, you can get another pet, or he had a good life, he was a good age, she says. For the owner, that doesn't make you feel any better, because you knew all of those things. You just feel sad and just want someone to listen and to understand. Another tip, bonds can run deep with any kind of animal. Don't assume that an owner's grief is commensurate with the size or type of the animal they lost, or the length of time that they had. The death of a pet lizard, for example, can be as painful for some people as losing their cutest of fur balls for others. My friend's dad had a koi pond, and he loves these koi, and he was so upset when a raccoon got in and killed his koi one summer. Some people would be like, oh, they're just fish, but he loved these fish, you know. So she suggested that friends can offer practical help. A grieving owner who no longer has four-legged reason to leave the house might appreciate the offer of a walk with a two-legged companion. People can really feel they lose their community, Bartles said. In the morning you get up, you bring your dog to the dog park, and you get to know a group of people who are there every morning really well, and that's your social community. And so then you lose your reason for going. You've lost a lot more than just a dog. Guilt often accompanies pet loss. Up to 30,000 people contact pet loss lines each year for pet loss support. Many aren't simply sad, but are also fearful that they may somehow have been responsible for their animal's death or disappearance. Guilt is a really big part of pet loss. They maybe think, oh, if I don't do something, or maybe if I had done something differently, maybe they'd have stayed alive a little bit longer, or if they were stolen, if I didn't put them in the garden, or what could I have done differently to change the inevitable? For bereaved owners who feel more upset about the loss of a pet than about a family member, that can trigger more guilt. It's really normal, she says, but it feels wrong to say, doesn't it? And people don't want to share that. Can a new pet help? Well, possibly, but it's not a magic bullet. Each animal has its own personality, and a new one won't necessarily fill the void left by another. And if your previous pet was fully grown, you may no longer have the patience for kittens, litters, or puppy training again. Bottom line, grieving can be truncated. The sadness and memories can be lasting. Bartels lost her dog, Seymour, last year. I'm sure I'll have a hard time again in June when it's this year's anniversary of when we put him down. De Carteret keeps her dog Ashes by her fireplace, which was his favorite place to sit. Some people will think that's weird, but you know, that's how I deal with it. You have to find the right way for you to grieve. This article, Losing a Pet Can Cut Deeper Than Many People Realize, Here's How Friends Can Help, was written by John Leicester. That completes our readings for today. I do hope you've enjoyed them, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce Vesper for Sun Sounds of Arizona and for Animal Companions. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.